Studio 360.
I grew up in the periphery of the world, I have to say, in southern Norway, and I'd never been to a museum, never seen art in person, really. I was a reader, but I had no experience of art in that sense, and I wasn't really interested either.
This is the most famous living Norwegian, the writer Karl Ove Knausgård.
And then we went to a school trip when I must have been like 17, around 16, 17 or something, to Oslo, and we went to the National Gallery. And walking around there, seeing the National Romantic paintings of fjords and mountains and, you know, lush green surfaces and realistic painting. And then turning a corner, coming into a room where everything is different. Everything is intense and everything is, you know, like the paintings are almost coming towards you.
This was the room that had the anguished expressionist paintings of Edvard Munch, including The Scream, one of the most world-famous images ever.
And it's probably one of the most beautiful rooms I have ever been in, because it's his 10 best paintings that's in that room. I realized this is, you know, on another level. This is something else.
Karl Ove Knausgård is best known for My Struggle, his acclaimed and immensely popular six-volume, 3,600-page, super autobiographical novel. But our conversation was about his new book, So Much Longing in So Little Space, which isn't entirely focused on him. It's about the creative process, using as a case study the paintings of Edvard Munch, who lived from 1863 to 1944 and is still this looming presence in Norway.
Munch is the only artist of international significance from Norway. So he's kind of the artist. And I can't remember when I first heard of him or when I first saw a picture of him. It's like he's always been there. So I had the school books, the covers of them could, for instance, be, you know, of a galloping horse that Munch had painted, or the sun that Munch had painted, or, you know. So it was like his images was everywhere, but the difference of seeing them live, seeing them in person was enormous, actually. It's like the paintings themselves have an aura, you know, that doesn't come through when it's reprinted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of the problem with a painter like Munch or a painter like Monet or every one of those painters. You have seen them so many times,
right,
that you've stopped seeing the paintings. You see only the character. You see Monet, you see Monet, you see Munch, you see Picasso, but you don't see the actual painting. You know,
right.
That's kind of a problem.
Which is exactly the problem you tried to solve when you were asked as a celebrity amateur to guest curate an exhibit at the Munch Museum in Norway.
Yeah.
Talk about the premise you decided on for that show.
As you said, I'm an amateur, but being an amateur, I didn't hesitate when they asked me. I said yes, you know, straight away, and I had no idea what this would take and what it would demand of me at all. And when they took me down to the basement in the Munch Museum, they had 1,000 paintings there, and they have 20,000 paperworks of him, and it's a massive amount of works. It was everything he left behind when he died. I saw so many paintings I'd never seen before. And I thought, that's what I want to show. I want to show Munch that doesn't look like Munch, that doesn't look the iconic Munch, but still is him and still kind of express the same emotions or the same worldview or whatever you want. But it's much easier to get access to it because you don't have to go the way through Munch, through everything you know about him. You could see them as, you know, afresh as they once were painted. That was my, you know, ambition.
And in your book, you also write about some of his lesser-known paintings that really don't seem Munchian at all. There's this early landscape called Garden with Red House, which I'd never seen. And it's the opposite of the stylized, grim, tormented pictures of his that we know.
Yeah.
It's this red house in rural Norway, and it's gorgeous. It's a pretty scene, but you'd never look at that and go, "Oh, yeah, Edvard Munch."
What I thought about that picture is because Munch has a biography, and it's very gloomy.
Yes,
his mother died when he was a child, and then he had a very close relationship to his older sister, who almost become his mother and sister in one person, and she died too. Another sister become schizophrenic and was in an institution. So those losses at a young age, I think, must have determined his outlook on life and his trust in life. He couldn't trust, I think. And it's easy to read his whole, you know, everything he did, all paintings in light of that, you know, the anxiety and the death and the gloom. And then you see those paintings he did,
yes,
you know, full of light, full of joy. You can't make that fit with what he later did at all. And then we realize, well, maybe painting was a place for him to hide, a place for him where nothing was threatening anything. It was just pleasure. It was just colors. It must have been like painting was his, you know, his home or his fortress or his world or a place where he was safe, a very good place. And then you have the confrontation in painting with his demons and with the terrible things in his life and with the dark things in his life. And those are the famous paintings, right, of course.
The most famous works, the ones that made him Munch, that seem Munchian, including The Scream, they all come from this really brief period in the 1890s when he was in his 30s, his period you call when he was the iconographer of strangeness, which is a great phrase. What's he doing that is so radical in those paintings at the time for him? What was the big deal at the moment?
He's not interested in describing the world as it is. He's interested in describing it as he remembers it. So he's a painter of memory and he's a painter of emotions, which means that there's hardly no details in the painting. So there's no realistic world anymore. It's like almost like a dream world. But if you go and see them, If you don't think about them, go and see them, you will see how powerful they are. They are very, very much alive, those paintings.
Definitely powerful. Here we are still talking about them. But you have a theory that good art gets made by improvising, by finding your message as you paint or write. And by that standard, these paintings are completely wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't begin with some open-endedness. They have an idea, they paint it.
Yeah, exactly. And they are not really paintings. They're more illustrations of feelings. There's no intellectual frame or anything like that around them. They are very direct and communicating almost instantly what they have. And, I mean, The Scream still is, if you see it, it's a very wild painting. It's extremely expressive and it's extremely careless, and it's so powerful and so ruthless somehow. It's like it's that makes the painting immediate, you know, completely, it's now, it's completely urgent. It's anxiety, it's that experience directly to you. It's so unfinished, and it got like this, you know, it's like a brush stroke going all the way down on the right side, signifying nothing. It's like it's
just that purple stripe.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what it is, but it is something there. And if you go back 10 years and see paintings, that would be impossible to do. It's just impossible. They wouldn't be a painting. You know, you can't have those kind of marks on a realistic, on a naturalistic painting. It just doesn't work. This is completely new visual language.
With a painting like The Scream, apart from its over-familiarity and its iconic quality, it's for all of its power, it's so obvious and, oh, okay, this anguish is happening. And you were struck by Munch and were knocked out by it when you were an adolescent. Is there something adolescent about Munch's appeal, like there is about Jack Kerouac or, you know, J.D. Salinger?
Yeah.
I mean, that people grow out of?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think especially that period, 1890s, where his most iconic paintings comes from, I think they have this adolescence appeal. It had for me, and I think it has for many, and because they are not intellectual, they are very easily accessible, and they are very powerful and not very complex, I have to say.
Yes.
I mean, that's how you experience art when you are in that age, you know. It's an adolescence that you hunger for that kind of experiences, I think.
What I didn't really realize about Munch, because of The Scream and the other famous pictures, is that he was always looking for some new visual language, trying to avoid not just cliches, but avoid repeating himself. You talk about the act of painting as this constant battle with what already exists and expectations and habit.
Yeah, exactly. You have convention and you have ways of doing things and you have tradition. And every time you lift the brush, you know, and start to paint, that will be in you. There will be ways of doing things that you will automatically have or know, you know. I have been struggling with that in my writing myself, and I think every writer, every painter struggles with that.
And you don't just mean the overused formula that everybody would regard as, oh, that's been used forever, that's a cliche. You mean any technique or any trope or any idea that an artist just comfortably returns to in his or her own work, right? It's all of one's personal habits as well and tics.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about safety. It's easy if you find a way to do it, if you find a way to paint or find a way to write, and it's, you know, proves to be successful or at least, you know, it works. It's very tempting just to continue because the risk of failure is enormous in doing these things, you know. So for instance, a man like, you know, David Bowie, he should be admired so much for the courage he had to completely go somewhere else, you know, like every second year in the 70s and 80s, because the risk and what's at stake is the comfort and you know your skill, you can do it, and it's easy, you can do it one more time, but if you do it, then you know what it is, and there's no curiosity anymore, and you won't find anything else, anything new.
Right. I'm fascinated by the common struggles and common challenges and problems of artists in different disciplines. You say, for instance, that a serious painter, quote, starts a work because he knows what he wants to do but not how to do it. And that seems at least as true of writing as painting.
Yeah. If you want to get rid of the novel before the novel, if you want to get rid of all the automatic ways in, then you have to do something from scratch, so to speak, and build something that you haven't done before. You don't know how to do it, you don't know, and it's kind of an amateur way of doing things, you know. It's no professionalism in it. It's like you do it for the first time, and I think that's the best place to be in writing. And you can feel it in the novel. It's not like a professional, you know, smooth, and it's like it's much more awkward. Uh-huh. And I think Munch somehow searched for those places in his painting throughout his life, actually.
You make in this context a really interesting point about Munch, which is that his relatively imperfect technical training compared to contemporaries was an advantage. Because it kind of forced him to find new solutions that they, in their more professional fluency, didn't have to reinvent the wheel.
That must be true in a way, because it is strange. You have many painters in a generation in a country, and it's so strange that, you know, one of them should go in that direction and everyone else not. What makes him or her go there? It's the same with, you know, Van Gogh or any great painter you can think of, you know, why and how. And still, those painters or those artists are the one that capture the time that we think of as representative for that period, you know. And that's so strange because they were really at odds with the time and with the generation. And, you know, there's an interesting dynamic in that, I think.
I found from reading this book, you're a painter as well.
No. No, I'm definitely not. I should really not have that in the book. But I was very depressed a few years ago. It was like I almost, you know, almost couldn't move. And I, I drove into town, I bought some oil painting, and I always wanted to do it, and I just started to paint. And getting colors on the canvas and making it into forms on the canvas completely was obsessive. It's like it's fields and it's sky mm-hmm. with clouds on, and it's worthless. But I get out of the depression and I do love it, but it's just for my own well-being. It's not nothing. It's just fun to have colors on a canvas.
Like Munch?
No, not like Munch. Sorry.
Karl Ove Knausgård, this has been a great pleasure. The book is a pleasure. It was great talking to you. Thanks.
Great talking to you, too. Thank you very much.
Karl Ove Knausgård's book, So Much Longing in So Little Space, The Art of Edvard Munch, is out now.